Welcome to Orange is the New Black. This is West Coast Project. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
I always have to take that little space out. And I'm Michelle space. Because it's a little too long.
Is it? Well, I never know if you're going to say, and I'm here with Michelle, so I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, well, you did good improv there. But this is season 2, episode 11, Take a Break from Your Values. And we start out by seeing a winter storm Wanda coming in.
Yep.
Up the eastern seaboard. And are they running out of names, Michelle, or what? Because why do they have to use Wanda for the name of the storm?
Well, they do it like in alphabetical order every year, right?
Yeah, but who knows? This is a show. They could have picked Charlie or Bruce or whatever. It's why do they have to pick a name that's already in the show?
I don't know. Wanda's, good question.
Wanda's the guard who likes giving the strip searches, right?
Belle, is that her name? Wanda? Yeah. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I wondered about that. We also find out that Sophia and... So Crystal was the woman there with Michael that last time we saw her.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't listen too closely. I guess she just mentioned both names and I thought they were both kids.
Well, right, because Sophia still worries and loves her wife, too. As a matter of fact, they're together, right? They never did split up because they were talking about how Sophia had to be comfortable with her getting close to other men since Sophia was going to be gone for so long and that she wasn't going to live her life without him or something, but I thought they were still kind of just like had an arrangement or something. I don't know, but Sophia always shows interest and affection toward her wife too. So
yeah, I don't think there's any way to know for sure.
Yeah, maybe not.
Just the fact that she brings her son is good, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and they seem loving toward one another.
Yeah, but if you're a man and you get a woman pregnant as a man and you have a son and then you turn into a woman, don't you think that's a little much for the woman in the relationship, the first woman, to handle?
I think it's an incredible lot for the wife at that point to have to handle. Yes, but remember when they showed Sophia's backstory, they showed her being very accommodating. She didn't love it, but she was accommodating. What she didn't want was him to get his penis removed, if you remember that. She wanted him to keep that, do everything else, because she still wanted that physical relationship, but he didn't, we find out. So I don't know.
That I think that's way too much of a coincidence that they were both able to deal with that, that the person goes through a sex reassignment and then the other person is okay with it, and they're still in the same relationship, and they manage all that, and they stay together. I could see them staying together as parents, but not as romantic partners.
Well, she sure gave it a good go if they didn't. She was really trying to be supportive and everything. But yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure how that ended up working out. But yeah. I'm pretty sure Crystal's the wife, ex-wife, mother of his son.
Yeah, okay. So, hey, before we get too far into this, I asked you at one point if you could pick out the faces of the people at the beginning of the credits and the beginning of the show.
Uh-huh.
And I looked that up, and there's no people from the show in those credits. Those are all real prisoners.
Are they? I was wondering about that, because ever since you said that, I've been really watching it closely. And a couple of them, like one of them looks like Crazy Eyes for sure.
Yeah, and the last one looks like Red for sure.
And there's another one that looks like Alex.
Yeah, with the glasses.
Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely have paid attention to that. But that's interesting that it's real prisoners.
So the reason why is the original producer wanted the credits to show the difference between luxurious life outside the prison and the people inside the prison. But then the writer said that it's better to just have real prisoners do it. So she gave those prisoners three thoughts to think of while they were taking their pictures. And the first was think of a peaceful place, think of a person who makes you laugh, and think of something that you want to forget. So if you think about that when you see those faces, you can kind of see some of them are smiling and some of them are not so happy. But it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of a brilliant thing to tell people to think about and gauge their facial expressions. I like that.
Yeah, so meanwhile, back at the show, Brooke is putting in demands for natural foods.
And I thought it was natural laundry detergent is what she wanted.
Yeah, but they got into some foods too, right? And the meth girls were like really passive aggressive about it. They're like, what do they want, syrup or something?
Yeah, one of them wanted real maple syrup because I can't stand the fake stuff. And then I think that was Angie. And then Leanne said she liked fake stuff better. It's this big quagmire over maple syrup. And it's really making Yoga Jones frustrated because she feels like she's standing up for basic human rights. And they're just kind of nitpicking.
Yeah, it was kind of a little comedic piece there. So next we see Sister Jane's flashback, and she's asking how long before Jesus speaks to me. She's doubting her faith. And I think at this point they're in the kind of the nun minor leagues. They're not really nuns yet. They're in their like pre-nun section of training.
Yeah, because they said something about they haven't gotten their veil or something. I'm not real familiar with that. But
taking the veil, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so if they aren't careful, you'll find out what Christ can do for you after you take the veil. But she calls her Sister Kennedy because she says, don't ask what Christ can do for you, ask what you can do for Christ or something like that. And that's what Kennedy said.
Yeah.
But they're all just twisting words. The head nun was just twisting words to get her to shut up and not really answer her question. Like, don't ask, you know, you'll find out when it's due time. But it's a pretty profound question. How do I know when Jesus speaks to me? If you got a mentor there, that's a pretty fair question, I think.
Well, yeah, and it's also like she said, she's a little jealous because she says the other sisters say Christ speaks to them, and she doesn't understand why Christ hasn't spoken to her.
Right, but everybody's just twisting the words to make it suit their own needs.
What do you mean?
Well, like the head nun is just saying, you'll hear it when it's time. And I think the other nuns are saying it because it makes them seem like they are reaching this connection with God.
Yeah, I don't know.
Figueroa's warden's office is a campaign center now. She's got posters everywhere.
Yeah.
And Caputo's shaking her down, it seems like. So Caputo knows about Mendez and he's holding that over her. Is that his leverage?
Well, yeah, she knows too, though. You know, I don't think that's... I mean, what kind of leverage would he have with that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, because she's trying to satisfy him by saying, look, calm down, you're getting a new bathroom and you're getting riot gear. And he's asking her, he's shaking her down. He's asking her for stuff because he has something. Like almost like if you don't give me what I want, this thing with Mendez is going to blow up bigger than you want it to be.
I don't see how he could do anything, though. What could he really do at this point?
But he's asking for that stuff. Or, you know, he's asking for favors, and she's saying, well, I'll give you a new bathroom, but, you know, you're already going to get it. And riot gear is really stuff from the old maximum security prison that they handed down to them.
Right.
So she's trying to keep him happy with this stuff.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what his goal was being in there, except at the end she's talking about a concert and he wants his band to play in it, and she shuts that down pretty quick. But yeah, he does find out that the B dorm bathroom is going to be fixed, and so he's pretty happy with that. He seems and has seemed real concerned over that kind of stuff. And it was funny because he was asking her how much it was going to cost and she never would tell him. You wouldn't think that would be a secret, right? Or anything,
yeah, but
that
if
you wouldn't
she doesn't
brag
want,
about.
She doesn't want any specific dollar figure information going around because she's playing with all that money.
Yeah, but who who would have the right to know that kind of stuff in that situation? Is it not something that would be general knowledge as far as that kind of stuff goes? I don't know. It just seems like it would be something that would have to be more forthcoming to prevent you from looking guilty or at least suspicious.
Yeah, but we already know she's playing that game. She's not sharing any of that crap. And she's got authority over him, so why would she bother to tell him if she doesn't want to?
Well, that's a good point.
So Piper and Dyer are talking about the Bugle, the paper, and they talk about the horse and the eagle. Did you read the cartoon about the... And Dyer says it's a hawk, not an eagle.
I did. I paused it on this one because you got me last time. So I paused it on this one and read that. I didn't think it was very funny, but...
Yeah, it's not very funny. It's not even that profound, I think. But do you want to read it?
No, go ahead. I don't even have it printed out or anything.
Well, the hawk says to the horse, "I heard you were pregnant." And the horse says, "Does everybody know?" And then the second frame of the cartoon, the hawk says, "Pretty much. Do you have a man to help you?" And the horse says, "I don't have anyone." And then in the final frame, the horse says, "I must shoulder the burden alone." So that's obviously Dyer thinking nobody's there on her side on this, you know, the husband or the father isn't stepping up to help shoulder this burden of being a parent. I don't know. I don't think it was funny, and I don't think it was too profound either.
No, and I don't even think it was too true. What does she want? What does she want? She has Mendez jumping up and down and saying he's the father. I mean, of course he's not there, but that's because she told on him and he got taken away. She has Bennett behind the scenes trying to handle it selfishly, granted, but trying to handle it and telling her he loves her and stuff like that. She actually has double the support. And of course, she can't put that in the comic because she can't have everybody know that. But does she really feel like she's that much of a victim in this situation?
Well, I think it's fruitless to try to discuss what Dyer wants because she's just stupid and crazy.
It's frustrating. It is. It's, yeah, you're right. It's fruitless, but it's frustrating to try to decipher what she wants.
Well, she wants different things at different times, too. She changes what she wants.
Yeah, but I was kind of annoyed seeing that she has to shoulder it alone.
But we know what Brooke wants. Brooke wants the strike demands in the paper.
She does.
And Piper, she's babbling away. And Piper says, "Do you know the great Gandhi quote, 'Speak only if it improves the silence'?" And, of course, that unleashes a whole torrent of new words from Brooke. They walk away. She walks away talking to her. She can't get away from her.
She prattles on for sure.
And so we do see Bennett trying to talk to Dyer next, and he wants to talk, but she's being a bitch back to him.
Yeah, she says if it's not an order, then no, I'm busy, and walks off.
Yeah, so next we see V and Poussey, and this is why I kind of think everybody's twisting their words a little bit in this, because she says, "That was a nasty fall you took." Even though it's just them, I mean, they both know the truth. There's no reason for her to twist words between her and Poussey.
Well, she's never going to verbally acknowledge what happened. She would never do that, I would think, anyway. But, yeah, it's like they do kind of talk in riddles. You're right.
But then she does say, "You live in my house." So then she kind of slaps her into reality. And Poussey says, "Did you come to prison by accident or were you too weak on the outside?" Which is kind of a pretty deep cut for her to say to V.
Yeah, you could tell she's afraid of her by her facial expressions and her reactions to V, but she's standing up to her. She's not going to tolerate any bullying without a fight.
Yeah, Poussey knows the right street slang to throw at her. She says, "Real players laugh in your face. What do I got left to lose?" What do I got left to lose really stopped V in her tracks. She realized when you have somebody cornered, that's probably their most vicious time.
Yeah, that's why I was actually going to bring that up to you. I think people who have nothing left to lose are the most dangerous kind of people to mess with.
Well, that's what V's strategy is. She leverages what people have as weakness. And if you're cornered, you don't really have much weakness left. You have nothing left to lose. You'll fight to the death or whatever. She has nothing weak on Pusey that she can play upon anymore. Right.
That's right.
And that's her game. Healy's reading a book in his office, Rejuvenile. And Rejuvenile is about kickball, cartoons, cupcakes, and the reinvention of the American grown-up.
Okay, I didn't notice any of that, but that's pretty interesting.
Well, that was the book title, Rejuvenile, had that description on the front cover of it. So he's reading, at least you got to say Healy's trying to do his job right. If he's a counselor, he's at least playing the role, right? He's reading the books and trying to, you know, he's going into therapy himself and copying what she says to him back to the girls. So he's trying to do it. I don't think he's very good at it, but he's trying.
Yeah, we see him do that several times throughout this. He attempts. He gets really angry when his attempts aren't well received, but he does attempt. I'll give him that.
He even puts an ad for a Safe Place in the paper, in the Bugle.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's excited about Safe Place.
Oh, we find out some stuff about Healy. He his mom had electroshock, and it's funny because he can't bullshit Piper like he can Pennsylvania. So he's pretty honest with Piper, and Piper, it looks like she was taken aback a little bit hearing that his mother had electroshock.
Well, she had just kind of mocked it as well. She just brought up, at least they're, if we don't progress, would still be doing electroshock therapy. And then he brings up, my mom had electroshock. And he kind of talks it up. It's very effective or something in certain situations. And, of course, that's a shocking thing to hear. And then he actually goes on to say, as if it makes no difference, that she made a lot of soup afterward. I mean, what a horrible visual to give us that on a procedure that he talks up. It's just like,
well, he's out of touch. He's out of touch realizing that that's like a horrible result of electroshock, and it'd be hard for a prisoner to have to hear that. He's just blind to it. You know, that's why he's not good at his job.
That's a good point.
But Piper's in there for a reason. She wants to put Alex on her call list so she can talk to her. And she twists it so that it works for Healy by saying that would really add closure, and it's psychologically not without value. Right. So she spins it so it sounds good to him. And he asks her to put the word in the feelings jar, and her word is grateful.
Well, after he signs it, it is. Before that, she's like not even, I mean, it's like a kind of a tit for tat thing. He wants an emotion put in the feelings jar, and she wants that paper signed.
Don't you think a good therapist would say, Piper, I get the feeling you're saying this just because it sounds good to me, and what do you really want, and why do you really want this? Why do you really want me to do this? Instead, he's just blind to it, and it works on him. She works him like a puppet.
Yeah, but I think they're showing us that he's much like the electroshock and the Safe Place even group that he's trying to start with Pennsylvania. I think they're showing us that he's blind to everything. But how else is he going to improve and get better except for try these different things, which you have to at least give him credit for that. But yeah, I think they're showing us time and again that he's just blind to everything.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how Healy and V almost work the same way. Like, V builds her gang with the weakest people first, and then she moves up and up and up and tries to get everybody. But the strongest ones are the ones that hold out the longest, like Pusey. And so Healy does that too, building his group there. He builds it with Pennsylvania. She's kind of dopey and weak at first. And then he builds it up, and he's trying to get these other women to come, but he has to trade things to them to get them to come. The smartest ones are the last ones to join.
Don't you think that's normal? Don't you think that's just life as far as something like that? These women are not going to be trusting, and it's certainly not in a situation where they go in there and feel like anything they say is safe. I mean, are you kidding me? They're going to go in this group with other prisoners in there and tell their deepest, darkest thoughts and believe that because it's set in this place called Safe Place with the counselor, that they're not going to be held responsible for the things that they say in there. I mean, that would be crazy.
Yeah, but the
believe that.
The thing I have out of it is they're both trying to build groups of people that don't want to be in the group, both V and Healy. So they use leverage over them to get them in their groups.
Yeah, I can see that.
So we see Red talking to Frieda, and she says, "You sold me out." She thinks Frieda was the one that told about the tunnel, the sewer tunnel.
Yeah.
And
I don't know where she got that. Why would she think Frieda did it?
I don't know. Mistaken, I guess. We might have missed something in that scene that maybe Frieda. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't catch why.
No, I didn't get it at all, why she accused Frieda of it.
But Nichols is kind of making fun of her. Like, yeah, she's the Judas. Like it's a big deal. And then they find Black Cindy in the bathroom overhearing them. And Black Cindy has a good point. She's like, you think you can just talk out loud with not even trying to disguise what you're saying and be secretive about these things? And she's, you know, she just could have been simple. She could have just overheard anything they said and shared it with everyone.
Right, because when people know it's coming in and people know Red's getting it and whatever, and it wouldn't be that hard for anybody to, as evidenced by, for anybody to figure out what was going on. So I agree with that. But Red is upset that they're bringing drugs in, and she talks to Black Cindy about that and asks her, do they not remember Trisha and what happened? And, you know, Black Cindy, of course, has her quick response that she remembers the Alamo too, but it doesn't stop her from eating Mexican food. I mean, she doesn't care.
Yeah. There's another mini theme in this episode too, and it's kind of about snitches, because Cindy tells Red that it was Boo that told V about the tunnel, and then Nichols says, well, that was a short mystery. But so then later on, Boo gets kind of slammed by V for being a snitch, but Cindy was a snitch right there too, and Cindy's one of V's strongest soldiers.
Yeah, but Cindy has no allegiance to Boo. There was no reason. They didn't care. They used Boo and then discarded her. Plus, Boo got something out of that too. That was more like a, for lack of knowing how to put it better, a business deal than anything else between Boo and V.
Yeah, but I think people who don't like snitches don't like all snitches. Like, even if there are snitches that don't benefit them, it's just a bad, bad thing to be. Not that you're my friend and you're, you know, if you snitch but it helps me, they still hate the snitch.
That's a good point. But I, you know, I would think that that wouldn't have been something that they viewed as being confidential necessarily. So they might not even view that as snitching because it wasn't something that was a secret. They didn't care for people knowing that.
Maybe. Well, the third thing we hear about a snitch is later on with Alex and Piper talking about that guy that Alex snitched on.
Yeah.
So the prison guards get some new billy clubs, helmet, shields, tear gas. And this reminded me of Ferguson, all this crap that's happening in St. Louis with like these guys that have all these military toys that are way above their league that get into playing with these toys. And we even see it later on. They're practicing with the shields and the fake guns and stuff. And they're, you know, they're not even able to practice a stupid little takedown with a fake gun.
Yeah. Well, Caputo, he thinks that gear's ridiculous for them to have down there anyway. And really it is, because we found that anytime they do anything at all, they get taken to maximum security, right? That's where Shu is, we're assuming, correct? Which is like up the hill or whatever. So they're not even kept down there if they do anything. I suppose a riot could happen, but that's not, it's just seems so over the top for what we've seen with this. I don't know.
Well, it's exactly what happened with the police department in real life in Ferguson. They got handed down military gear or bought it at a super discount or whatever. It wasn't designed for them. It was designated for other people that have more military concerns. And just like in Litchfield, they're a minimum security prison, and they got handed down the maximum security equipment. It's not designed for them, but to them, it's a great fun toy to play with. They're all like, just looking at as they're opening the stuff, the guys are all excited. It's like they're opening Christmas presents.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, they are. They like having the tough stuff down there, but you're right in that it's certainly not.
And I think it plays out in real life. I mean, this was probably written 2 years ago, and here we are in 2014 seeing in real life, you know, these real life guys playing with these toys. I don't know. It's just a theme, I think, in law enforcement and people in the military stuff. Like, they think of this stuff as a game almost. Caputo makes them lock all that stuff up. He doesn't like the hunger strike article. You know, Caputo's the only one in here making any real sense and logic.
Well, Caputo didn't know anything about the hunger strike. Yeah. This is the first he's even hearing about it.
Yeah,
so he feels out of touch, and that makes him feel bad, mad, or whatever. So,
well, Healy was all excited, and he gave the copy to the guard and said, go make me 100 copies of this. So Healy made that call.
Well, he didn't even look. He didn't even see the hunger strike.
Well, he wanted his ad to be printed, and that's all he cared about. So it's pretty everybody's, as usual, pretty selfish to their own concerns.
Sure.
So the bathroom's getting fixed, and Watson comes out of the shoe, I guess. Watson looks pretty shaken after being in the shoe.
Well, but first he goes to the ladies as they're sitting there, the hunger strike group, Caputo does, right? That's before that. And he talks to them about what all's happening, and he says that Watson is getting out. And they're like, yay. And they're sitting there doing all that silly stuff. You know, even so-so, she's doing like the silly stuff. Okay, fingers up, twinkles, that means yay or whatever. I mean, they're just as silly. And Yoga Jones is sitting there going, look, this is serious stuff. I don't know that we need to be doing all this. But anyway, Caputo comes up and he tells them that the bathroom's going to be fixed. And they think they might have had something to do with it momentarily, and then he explains to them that they had nothing to do with it. It was already in the works and blah, blah. And then when Yoga Jones brings up that about using shoe the way they use it, he says that just because that there's absolutely a protocol in place for using that, and they're under no obligation to explain it to them, but Watson's being brought back up today, and it had nothing to do with you. It's just the timing of it. But this is when Sister comes over, and she starts talking about elderly rights in prison, the compassionate release, and how they did Jimmy. I mean, she doesn't say her name, but specifically, I don't think. But she talks about how they release people, and she kind of rises up within herself, and you see her passion for the protest finally come out.
Yeah, she does say, she says Jimmy's on the street.
Okay,
put Jimmy on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Caputo admirably almost does address their concerns right away. He gets mad about the paper, but he goes right up to them and starts to talk to them about those very concerns and addresses them each, like, one after the other.
Yeah, until they get to, like, the silliness. I mean, Angie and Leanne are just silly. It's nonsense. But anyway, yeah, you're right. He does.
They're perfectly in character to how they've always been.
They are perfectly in character.
So we get a flashback to a groovy VW van, and it's the minor league nuns coming back from the war rally, and they're going to be in trouble because they kind of snuck away to go to this stop the Vietnam War.
Well, they thought Sister Constance let him go, and because the one nun told the sister, we know, and another nun, that she had given her blessing for it, but they find out here that she hadn't actually done that at all. But the sister says that they have to stand up for what's right, and that's what they're taught to do. And you know, the sister really loves this stuff. She's really kind of found some footing in this protesting. So
yeah, Jane. But Jane was the only one who didn't know. The other one said, It's approved by Sister Constance, and then she says it's in. But I must have meant in spirit or something.
Yeah, only one of them knew. One of them duped the other two, and it was funny because is her name Jane? Her first name's Jane. It's Jane Ingalls, I think.
Yeah, but, Jane Ingalls.
Yeah, but she says I've fallen in with the bad nuns or something. It was so funny, but yeah, she definitely felt duped about the whole thing, but I think they're also showing how she started her protests and the things that she found value in.
Yeah, I can't believe she's in prison for what she's in prison for. Well, we'll get to that in the scene coming up. But
I want to talk to you about that, too. So, yeah.
So next we do see Watson come back from the shoot. She's in the cafeteria, and they're teasing her, and she kind of fires back at them like, This is more bullshit than you think. It is pretty bad to be in SHU. She looks all tired and worn out and just through the ringer.
Yeah, she looks beaten down. It's definitely something you can tell is not an easy thing on her, and she doesn't appreciate the girls making fun.
So Pennsylvania stands up and broadcasts the next meeting of the Safe Place and tries to get people to get interested in it.
They also find out here that you get a shot off your record for attending.
Yeah, but do you really?
I think they do. That was what Healy, that's how Healy got all the girls there. How it's, the first one, remember, there was nobody there. And then the second time that they show it, it's full.
Yeah, but Black Cindy's saying this, and she stretches the truth, though, to the point where she says there's a snitching jar in his office.
Right.
It's almost like a game of telephone. Like she heard something and then, you know, embellished it up to another level. And then all of a sudden there's a jar where you put snitches in, you know, you put little facts in that Healy can use to snitch on people. He didn't offer that, you know, he didn't offer that. He might've said, if you go to the meeting, you get a shot off your record, but they've embellished it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I took it at face value, but you could be right.
You think he really offered the snitching jar? Like, you put some snitch in there, and I'll give you credit for...
No, I don't think it was... No, I think that was Black Cindy's interpretation of that, but I thought that the shot off your record for going to this seemed... I don't know. I believe that part of it. I don't really know why I did, now that you're asking...
So then Crazy Eyes hears all this and offers to sign up as an eye spyer.
Right, because Poussey is going. They know that Poussey's going, and they want to make sure, I guess, after Black Cindy said that about the snitch jar, they want to make sure Poussey's not going to go there and snitch on what happened to her.
And we hear more from Crazy Eyes with her stupid/genius statements. She says, "My brain works, so yours don't have to." And then she calls she calls Tiffany, "Hey, Pennsylvania." She mixes up the states.
I just love Crazy Eyes' character. Love it. One of my favorites.
We see Pete talking to Polly and Larry about his Alaska adventures. And Polly and Larry talk to him about the truth that they're in a relationship. But he before they get to that, he mistakenly thinks they're holding an intervention or something.
Yeah, they think he's an alcoholic or something. And then he thinks they want a threesome. And
I'm not an alcoholic. I'm Australian.
Yeah.
I'm not an idiot. You want a threesome. And it proves like he is an idiot.
Yeah.
But he's been cuckolding.
That's what he said.
So, Michelle, what do you think of Polly's choice in men? She's jumping right from Pete the frying pan into Larry the fire.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, is it ever a good idea, as a general rule, to date your best friend's fresh ex-fiancé? Probably not. But they do seem to have something together. They're both, and I'm curious. I'm much farther along in the real book now, but I'm not that far along, and I'm really curious as to how that ends up, assuming that's even in there. I'm curious as to how Polly and Larry end up.
I don't think there's a hope for them in a million.
Why?
because they're this whole relationship is born out of how you just described it. She cheated on her best friend, and he cheated on her best friend. I mean, they did the exact same negative thing to each other, and now they're together. They're like, they fell into each other from a huge mistake.
They did. It's certainly not ideal, but Pete's horrible. He's horrible. Larry and Piper weren't the best. Of course, their show, I don't know. Polly's not a good friend, obviously. But I don't know. I kind of like their interaction.
You have too much hope for losers.
I kind of like their interaction together. I do. I can't help it. I want to not, and I try to not like it, but I kind of do. They're kind of perfect.
Of course you do. I wouldn't expect anything else from you, Michelle.
No, Mike, it's true. They're kind of perfect for each other in their neurotic ways. But what'd you think about Pete punching him?
Well, so this is why I thought there was this theme of twisted words. Pete says, I went away so I could become a man for our son. You know he went away to just have fun and drink beer and be with his buddies. He didn't do that for their son.
He went away to avoid how hard it is when you have this newborn in the house.
That's not what he says. He tries to twist it to say, I did this for our son so I could become a better somebody, better man.
Absolutely.
That's more twisting of words. And then he punches Larry. But that was great. I loved it when he punched Larry.
That's a great rationalization. And I didn't blame him for punching Larry. I didn't blame him for it. I don't know if I loved it. I don't know if I took it as far as you did. But Larry standing up and trying to tell him anything was very inappropriate, to say the least, at that point.
The only thing better would be if he broke his hand and he would have got hurt too, but... so now we see Daya and her mom, Alita. You should be happy. You and Stumpy can limp off into the sunset. She's telling Daya she can be happy. But Alita's mistaken. She thinks Bennett is really not the father, and Pornstash is.
No, she knows Bennett's the father. All That's right. not what she said. No. How'd you get that?
Now I'm going to have to find this and play it for you.
No, she says that she's going to get child support from Mendez. Or from Pornstash, yeah. But she's also going to be able to coerce Bennett into giving her money as well.
So she's saying you're going to use the lie that Mendez is your father, is the father?
Yeah, they're going to play that out forever and let Mendez pay child support on this kid. And then she's still going to have Bennett, you know, she'll be able to extort money from him. Plus, what she's going to get from, I assume, the state or whatever for this happening in their care is what she was saying.
All right. Well, I guess if she knows that it's a lie with Mendez, then she does know. But that's what she does say, because you're going to get child support from Mendez, which we know isn't the father.
No, but remember, she is the one that encouraged her to have sex with him, wasn't she? It was her that encouraged that to happen once she was pregnant. I don't know that that was Daya's idea.
Yeah, I guess just the way she said it. She didn't say, you're going to get child support from this idiot who thinks he's the father. She said, you're going to get child support from Mendez.
Right.
So, I don't know. It was a little weird. But then she's like, she's a really crappy mom, too, because Daya says, I feel really stupid. And she says, it's all right, baby. A lot of stupid people lead productive lives.
Oh, I know.
At least you're getting paid.
I know.
So that baby is dollar signs to her.
Yeah, and don't forget me when the checks start coming in.
Yeah, it's the best thing that ever happened to you.
I mean, what a it's just, you think you can't dislike her parenting more. And then she comes up with that.
So Piper calls Alex and asks why she turned her in, turned on her in the testimony. And... she says she was going to get more time. She twists it. Like, I was going to get more time than you. I deserved it more than you. I could walk. And
I was very unsatisfied with her answer. She didn't really give her an answer that made any sense. There was no reason for Piper not to benefit from the same thing that Alex would have benefited from that I could see.
Well, she justified her position. She just justified it.
Yeah, but why wouldn't she want Piper to get out, too?
Because she didn't think her, she thought her chances were better of getting out if she was the one who gave the that info. They both gave it.
Yeah, but that, why? That didn't make any sense. Because double the people testifying, you would think that if they're going to offer something for your testifying, that they would offer it, right?
Yeah, but didn't we talk about this at the time, that she might have thought that maybe the first one who offers it gets the best deal? And if she had more
time... She should have known that, though. No, she should have known that, because...
So why did she do it that way, then, Michelle?
I don't know, because she's not a good person, I guess.
Yeah, but she's
trying
to... There's a reason behind it, even if you're not a good person. She didn't try to... She didn't want Piper to stay in jail.
Well, I don't know. Did she not? Because her attorney would have told her. If her attorney would have said, or she could have even said, my attorney said I had to be the only one to say it, or they wouldn't give it to. But none of that just makes any, I mean, I'm not an attorney, but none of that makes any legal sense to me.
You never heard cops on the TV say the first one who speaks gets the get out of jail free card?
I don't know.
Well, I have. They do say that. So I'm sure that's born in some sort of truth somewhere.
Maybe.
Anyway, I don't think Alex wants Piper in jail. There's no benefit to her to that. I think she thought she had an advantage by being the one who broke this news, and she was the one that had this big revealing thing about Kubra, and she didn't. You know, it turns out that there was actually a mistrial. Maybe, ironically, if she had let Piper in on it and told her, you know, if we both do this, the trial would have been more real, and he would have been thrown away forever. But it turns out he's not. There's a mistrial, and he's out, probably out stalking her somewhere, because people are coming to her door.
Yeah, and Piper also comes to the realization that she's the only one out of this whole thing that's in prison over this.
Yep.
And she probably had the least to do with it of any of them, by what they're showing us.
Alex is in Queens drinking wine in the middle of the day, and she's just right where Piper just was.
Yep.
But no one, here's an irony too, no one comes to visit Alex, and people can come to visit Piper. So the phone runs out of time, and Piper gets all mad and starts pounding the wall, and the guard starts to write her up, and she calls the Menses Madness to get out of it. Menses Madness, I guess.
Yeah, and that seems to work. But Alex also wanted to come talk to her in person. She wants to get it put on her visitation list because there's things she needs to talk to her about in person.
And that's stupid, because if they're looking for her, they're going to find her at the prison.
Well, they know where she is, though.
Not the bad guys.
Yeah, well, they do.
Well, they do right now, here. But the theory is she's undercover. She's hiding.
Yeah, I don't think she thinks she's hiding. I thought she said that just to... See, this is what I don't really understand about the character, because she was, like, trying to make Piper feel better that she was safe. But I think she knew she wasn't safe, because right
No,
then,
Michelle, she's hiding. She's hiding out in this place in Queens. That's why nobody comes to visit her. That's why the curtains are drawn in the daytime. She's worried about getting repercussions from Kubra. She's hiding.
She is trying to hide, but I don't think she feels safe, because right here, the banging comes on the door. I mean, it's right here. It's the very next scene.
Right. And, well, coming to visit Piper in prison, if you're hiding, is not a good idea. If people are looking for you and your friend is in prison and you go to visit, they're going to find you. So that's what I'm saying. It's not a good idea for her to plan on going seeing Piper.
Well, they're going to what? They're going to come to the prison to get you?
Well, they're gonna follow her. They're gonna see the car going. They don't pick her up in the prison meeting room, but they'll follow her and find her,
I guess. But we find out that they know where she is anyway.
But before the knock on the door, how on God's good earth is Alex drinking milk after drinking white wine? She's drinking milk right out of the jug in the refrigerator after a glass of white wine.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Is this another day, maybe, or sometime later? Has
no,
to be.
No, they're showing exactly. They're showing exactly.
You cannot drink milk after you drink white wine. It's against all laws of nature.
I agree with you, but I think the time was right then.
All right, I do too, but I don't get the milk. So, but this guy at the door, is this really the garbage guy, or do you think he's some undercover?
No, it's the garbage guy. Okay. It's definitely the, it's, I don't think he's the garbage guy. I think he's some kind of maintenance or somebody who does something with the apartment that she's in. But yeah, he's banging on the door, and of course it's a whore, but he thinks she's Mrs. Wu or something. I think he's like at the wrong apartment or whatever, but it scares her to death. And then of course, when she opens the door, he's much nicer to her because she's cute and everything. Then he tells her that some Arab guys were there looking.
Why is she even opening the door?
Yeah.
I mean, she's afraid. She gets a knife. She peeks through the thing, and then she opens it. She doesn't know who that guy is.
No, she doesn't.
And she opens the door. Just be not home. You know, if he thought that was Mrs. Wu's apartment, even if he's just the regular maintenance man, that's good. It's better than when the Arab guy's questioning him. He just says, no, that's not. There's a Chinese lady up in there. You don't need to go there.
Yeah.
It's better for him to not know that it's a young, cute Alex in there.
Yeah. I don't really know why she would open. That's the whole thing. I mean, how scared is she of Kubra and the guy?
She's scared, Monsieur. She got the knife to...
To do what?
You don't think she's scared of Kubra?
Yeah, I do, but I do. That's kind of my question, though, is if she's so scared, why go to the door? Does she really think she's going to fight off these, what are they, hitmen?
Well, it's kind of a plot failing, I think. It's not very good plot because it doesn't make sense. She is very scared, but still she opens the door. It doesn't add up.
Unless it adds up to show us the next scene. Or not the next scene, but the scene that comes not in this episode, but later on. So we'll talk about that maybe when the time comes.
So Polly and Larry, Larry's got the black eye. And
yeah, that was quite the punch.
It's a good thing they hid the Aleut whaling spear, so Pete doesn't grab a hold of that.
Yep.
But Larry says he and Piper ended in a good place.
I don't know if I got that from their ending, but okay.
We see some endings of things, some like the closings of circles, like Polly and Pete and Alex and Kubra. Like, things that have been spun into motion are coming to their completion here.
Yeah. But Polly says Pete's secretly happy to be off the hook. And I agree with her. I agree with that. I think he is, too.
Maybe. But that serves Polly, too, to her, have her, if even if it's, it may be true, but even if it's not true, it serves her to have that thought.
Yeah, either way. Either way, her thought serves her, but I believe that. I believe that Pete wanted out. So
speaking of circles, we see the people that are willing to go into Healy's little circle of truth.
Yep.
We all have feelings. And some feelings that we feel are so strong that it's hard for us to be the person that we know in our hearts that we can be. So what's the best way for us to deal with these kinds of powerful and dangerous feelings?
Let them have it.
Pennsylvania deals with feelings by that punch. And Healy says talking's important, but then tells Pennsylvania to shut up.
Yeah. Well, Pennsylvania's acting like she calls herself the group facilitator. And he's like, no, you're not. He doesn't give her a lot of love in that group.
It's like Dwight Schrute. He's the assistant manager. And like, no, you're not. You're the assistant to the assistant. But they start with Flores. Flores gives Flores the walking talking stick. Flores is the one who had the cell phone, and people thought she was insane because she was talking in the cell in the bathroom stall.
Right, talking to El Diablo or Diablo or something.
Yeah, she has no desire to be talking. Like, she just gets the walking stick.
Right, and I guess that's why I thought that they're there, but they're kind of sullenly there, and I think the word has at least gotten out that they get a shot off their record for being there. Because why would you go there and sit there sullenly?
Yep. Well, sometimes you see that in groups. People are there and they don't really want to be there. But they're not coerced to being there. These girls are kind of coerced. You know, it's hard, too hard to resist not getting a shot taken off your record.
Right.
But Flores says she's happy. I feel very happy. And she looks miserable. And Healy has the feelings chart, and she picks out very depressed.
Yeah, which is just, I mean, crazy. It's crazy. You don't say you're happy and then, you know, look at a chart and say, no, this one fits me better, and go like 180.
Yeah, and then so
that makes the whole thing seem silly.
They ask Poussey. She says she's bored, and then she can't say that because it's not on the chart. And then so she says she's mad because she can't feel bored.
Yeah.
But then Crazy shows up, and Poussey might have been ready to start talking about a few things. But, of course, Crazy being there, she doesn't want to say anything.
Well, yeah, and she's not just there. She's there, and she's facing her, and she's very intimidating in her posture toward Poussey. I just wouldn't think they would allow that to happen in there.
Well, they don't know. That's the irony of the group and of Healy. He doesn't know that what Poussey says next, actually, is, didn't it occur to you that we don't want to know our feelings, that those feelings might make it, not knowing these feelings might make it the thing that keeps us alive in here. Staying out of touch of these feelings helps us survive.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting, and it was kind of profound thing to say, and maybe he didn't think about
that's
that.
That's Healy's job to know that, and and the prisoner, the patient, is the one telling the master the truth.
Right.
So Poussey can't tell why she's got these. She can't talk about her feelings because Suzanne's there, and Healy has no idea.
No, but I don't think she would have told anyway. Do you?
I don't know. It looked like she was almost ready to start talking, and then Suzanne showed up. Yeah. Something clearly changed in her if she wasn't going to say anything anyway, it wouldn't have mattered that Crazy Eyes showed up. But she looked kind of shocked that Crazy Eyes was sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. It kind of goes back to the snitch thing. I just don't picture Poussey being a snitch.
She didn't have to be a snitch to talk about what was bothering her.
No, but to have told what happened to her, she would have had to have been.
Well, maybe
that's what I'm saying. She could have definitely talked about the things that bother her, but really, how could she? It just goes back to everything we've talked about. Healy saying what happens in safe place stays in safe place. And this craziness. And if Poussey goes in there and starts talking about drugs are being smuggled in and she's uncomfortable with that, then do you really think that would stay there? I mean, does anybody think that kind of thing would be an okay thing to say without repercussion? I don't think anybody believes that.
Yeah, but I don't think you talk in specifics. I think you say, you know, I know some things that are harmful to other people and I feel guilty holding them. What do I do? And she doesn't say the specifics. Poussey changed, though, when Crazy showed up. Her whole demeanor changed because she was
fearful,
but she wouldn't. She wasn't going to say anything. Who cares if Crazy's sitting there or not? She's not going to beat her up in the circle there.
No.
Next, we see Jane and Soso, and Sister Jane and Soso, talking about social justice strategy. And then Leanne and Angie complain that Jane is too leadery. There were supposed to be no leaders. They're all leaders.
Yeah, and Sister Jane wants to know who Soso has contacted in the media to get the information out and everything. And I think she trusts, up until this point, I think she has trusted that Soso knows people and knows how to get this out, because that's Soso's thing, is that she's an activist, peaceful, whatever. And the only person Soso knows is someone who bakes anti-authoritarian cupcakes or something crazy. I mean, it's just nobody. So the sister tells her who to contact, people to contact, to make a difference, to get their hunger strike story out.
More than the Bugle, yeah.
Yeah, more than the Bugle and more than Soso's friends, who they're definitely showing her want to be activists, but certainly not to Sister Jane's level.
Yeah, and Leanne and Angie want dessert options, field trips, and Johnny Cash.
They want Johnny Cash, and Yoga Jones says he's dead, and Angie's like, I want what I want.
Well, it's funny because she says, that's ridiculous. Johnny Cash is dead. Not that it's ridiculous that they want these three stupid things.
No, but how ridiculous can you be? I mean, that's like the height of ridiculousness. And even faced with that kind of reality, Angie doesn't care. It's just, that's what she wants.
So the guards come in with pizzas and they bust up the hunger strike.
They do.
Little Caesars. It's the only thing better than getting what you want.
Little Caesars. Hard to resist.
And then we see the name game where Jane says, take a break from your values, girls. Have some pizza.
Yep.
They don't belong in the group anyway. They're not really committed to it.
No. And this is where she says everyone's opinions, you know, after hearing Angie's and Leanne's opinions on what's going on are not important. She's changed her mind over that.
So we see why Ingalls was arrested back in her flashback. And she was arrested as an older person. I didn't know that. I thought she might have been that young girl. But she was arrested as not too long ago. It looked like she looks the same.
Yeah. She's arrested for trespassing at a nuclear facility. That's what we're led to believe.
Yeah, a nuclear plant where nobody's there. They have to yell and shout and nobody's there. They cut right through the fence and walk up to it.
Yeah, they can't even get anybody to acknowledge. They just want acknowledgement that they're out there. And, of course, we find out that she's doing this to coincide with a book release, a book that she's written. So she wants the publicity for it. But so this is what she's in this prison for. She's in prison for this with these hardened drug people and all this other stuff. For her throwing costume paint on the side of a building?
Well, there's people in prison for doing mail card, credit card fraud with hardened drug people. That's not so surprising. But the fact that she's in jail, any kind of jail or any kind of thing at all, for throwing paint on a wall of a building which seems to be abandoned with two old hippies on welfare, it doesn't make much sense. But it's probably true. I bet there is somebody somewhere in jail for that.
That was, she's not very, it just doesn't seem all that criminally to me as far as, you know, on a scale of zero to criminal, she seems that pretty low. But of course they don't really tell us for sure, right, that that's what she's there for. They don't say that.
Well, that's why they show it. Why else would they show it?
Right. But I mean, that just seems, I'm like you, it's like, that's it.
I don't know. Cutting a fence on the perimeter of a nuclear plant is bad, but she didn't really do any damage. They threw some fake blood on the wall of a building that probably seemed like it was shut down and closed anyway.
Right.
It doesn't make much sense, but that's why she's there. Next, the guards are training with their new gear, their new toys from the shipment in, and they're not even doing a very good job, like we said.
No, it's ridiculous.
Watson is struggling with her thoughts and coming out of shoe and stuff, and Yoga Jones tries to help her, but Watson doesn't want to be her token black friend.
Yeah, I don't understand this scene. Did you understand that? I don't understand why she's angry at Yoga Jones. I mean, Yoga Jones cares about her, and I think Watson has always been... They've shown her to be... They had the friendship before. Am I thinking right? They're the ones that had the friendship where Yoga Jones was telling her what happened with the girl that or the child that she accidentally shot, right, or something. And I think it was her. I'm not 100% sure. But they kind of connected and shared something. And so Yoga Jones feels this protectiveness over her and this kinship, not kinship, but friendship toward her. And I don't understand why Watson treated her that way.
Well, she doesn't trust her, whether it's founded or not. She just doesn't trust her, and she doesn't want to be this. I think she kind of thinks that Yoga Jones is this activist who uses things to portray a story to other people, to the public or the media. And she doesn't want to be that part of the story, that you're just using me as a token.
Yoga Jones has never done that. Why would she think that?
Well, she thinks that, though.
But she's never done that. That would be a silly thing for her to think.
No, because she's part of this hunger strike group, and Watson sees that.
Oh, my gosh, but she's part of the hunger strike group because of Watson. That's why she joined to begin with, because Watson keeps getting thrown in the shoe for...
And Watson doesn't want her to, and Watson doesn't want her to represent her that way. She doesn't want to be the token black friend of this person trying to put a message across to the public. I could see that.
I suppose, but I don't think that the fact that Watson's black has anything to do with why Yoga Jones
doesn't.
Did it.
Watson's making this bigger thing out of it, but she, you know, she's just come back from SHU. She doesn't want to be a token. She's probably feels like more of a person.
Yeah, but your heart hurts watching her anyway, Watson. She's really upset. This is a bad situation for her, and I hate that she turned away that support. I didn't understand it.
She didn't turn away support in her mind. She turned away being used as an object in this greater argument of being a token in the position of the group. Like, we even have a black girl that thinks this, and she didn't want to be that black girl. She didn't get it. She didn't see it for the way it was intended. But that's her choice. You know, she can choose to not be that person if she wants to.
She can, and she did, but I wish they'd given us more to help me understand why she would turn against her for this.
Well, there's a lot of psychological things happening in this whole episode. The one with Poussey being backed into the corner and saying to Red, you know, I've got nothing else to lose. That's a mental position. And then we see it even in the next scene where Boo's the king bee now, and you know, she's really rejecting she's rejecting these gifts from the other girls. She's out of the family, but her expulsion from the family is really painful. We see that at the end of the scene. So it's all a lot of psychology. I think Watson's feeling that in the scene, you know, that just ended.
I get what you're saying, and I can see that. I just wish they had maybe had her vocalize more or something. I don't know. I thought it was very vague, and it left me really, really wondering, and it made me feel really sorry for both women, and I don't know.
A lot of people don't want to be helped for, you know, another thing is they just don't want to be helped. They don't want to admit that they need help and that they're being helped by somebody.
Yeah. And I mean, I completely get that. It's just that Watson is this young girl. She's young. And if you could have that kind of motherly figure to kind of look out for you and stand up for you, it makes me feel bad for her that she couldn't accept that.
Well, you can't help people until they want to be helped too. And if she doesn't want that help, it's not valuable for Yoga Jones to keep offering it.
Oh, I agree.
So in that next scene, we do see Boo. She's coming out of somewhere, and she sees the garbage pail kids, she calls them.
Mm-hmm.
Red meets her to sort out some health problems. There's rats in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out of the family, Boo. So Boo calls Red a joke, and the scene kind of ends. They all leave, but Boo sits there and thinks for a minute, and you can see that was very painful for her to be thrown out of that family.
Yeah, but what did she expect? I guess she thought she'd get away with it, right? But she had some kind of something vindictive. This was some kind of vindictive act that she did to tell V about Red. And we talked about that a little bit last time when she saw the grate. Was it because Red didn't acknowledge her individually and apologize to her, or whatever it was? There was something going on with that, but I don't know what she would have expected.
I think the message is you can be this, but she's probably the biggest, toughest prisoner. You know, I don't know about V or her in a fight, but Boo's the biggest, one of the biggest, toughest people. And she's calling these old ladies the garbage pail kids. She could beat up any one of them, and probably all five of them if she had to, and that they're a joke. But the mental thing of it was the powerful thing. The being expelled from the group was more painful than any pounding or fight that she could have taken from them.
Yeah, all of them coming there together to confront her, too.
Red was never aggressive. She was all calm, and she knew that the valuable thing to hold over Boo's head was this expulsion. So that psychology was like the most powerful weapon.
Yeah.
So we would go to the rec room. So-so's on the floor making signs. Piper and Nichols are playing foosball, and Piper tells tells her about Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki says she should go to the strip joint, her friend's strip joint under the Queensboro Bridge, where they have full nudity but not alcohol.
I must have missed that whole thing. Tell me that. I must have missed it.
Well, a lot of strip clubs, if they're full nudity, you don't have alcohol. And Nikki even makes a joke about that being, well, yeah, too much fun. Two times the fun would be, you know, bad. She's sarcastic.
Queens, huh? You should hook her up with my buddy Michelle. He runs a strip joint underneath the Queensboro Bridge. Well, it's full nude, but they don't serve alcohol. It's just such a fucked situation. I know, man. That's the law. I guess some schmuck decided that nudity and booze at the same time is just too much fun. It's probably a Mormon with six wives.
Do you remember it now that you heard it?
I did not. And I had it on, closed caption and everything. I must have just,
they're playing foosball in the same room that So-So is drawing the drawings.
Right, doing her posters or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I've got the whole scene. I'm actually sitting here watching it and reading it as you were playing it, but I don't know why I skipped that whole thing. Didn't even think about it. But yeah, she's talking about if it's not part of your deal, it's not part of your deal. Piper wants, but it wasn't specifically about Piper and what Piper didn't get and what Alex did get. It was about what Alex got, and now Cooper got off.
Right.
And she wants Alex protected. And Nikki's like, why do you care? But she does care, obviously. And she says, you know, the system doesn't have a conscience. Nobody's going to do any extra work if it wasn't part of the deal to protect her. But of course, how would it be part of the deal? Because Alex thought Cooper was going to be gone.
Right, so, it was a mistrial. I just like how Nikki's like Mother Nature. She's like, I'm gravity and this is how I work. If the larger mass will attract the smaller mass. She just states the truth, like, really, really honestly, and most oftentimes very full of humor. But she's just the cold, hard facts, the cold, hard truth, you know?
Yeah, she's very unoffensive in her truthfulness for the most part, too. And I really like her.
So Jane does stand up to Figueroa, though. Like, she tries to anyway. And Figueroa says, no more newspaper, no more Waldorf prison.
Yeah, she takes away So-So's crayons.
Yeah.
It was like, what? That was crazy.
And then we see Jane's flashback. She's getting reviewed by some priest. So she did make it into the sisterhood, even though she got in trouble at the Vietnam War protest.
Oh, yeah. She was obviously a sister for a good long while.
But that timing was unusual to see her get in a little bit of trouble as a very young pre-nun. And then in her prison time, it was 30 years later or whatever.
But yeah, I think they were showing that she did it from day one. She was always, and then she escalated it. But they also showed that she had a personal agenda.
She's an opportunist, yeah. She gets in trouble by this priest for co-timing the event with a book release.
Yeah, and also some of the excerpts in her book, which he reads, was not something that they would support.
So she gets excommunicated. She's out.
Yep.
And we go back to the Golden Girls. And they decide to kill the tunnel instead of letting V take it over?
Well, they are talking about that Red would rather kill the tunnel than let V take it over. And that's why Red's not there, whatever. And then the one with the hair decides to do something about it. I don't know her name.
Tazlitz.
Tazlitz?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she decides to do something about it. She kind of makes him an offer that she'll kill V.
Yeah, she starts stalking V. Now, Tazlitz is a pretty interesting actress. She's Judith Anna Roberts. And she was in the movie Eraserhead. You might have heard about that a long time ago, 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Her description in Eraserhead is the beautiful girl across the hall. So she was a really pretty girl back in 1977.
Aw, that's neat.
She was also in... She was in Woody Allen's Stardust Memories in 1980, and she sang a song in that. And, yeah, but does she say it, or does the other one say it, that when pirates invade your ship, you don't sink the ship, you fight them?
Yeah, I think that's the other one. Yeah. Frida. Maybe Frida.
Yeah, so that's Tazlitt's, though. She's stalking V now.
Well, yeah, they're really mad over what V's doing, breaking up their party out there.
Yeah, but we also get a taste of what level of criminal participation these older Golden Girls have been in. So Tazlitt's is not some, you know, throwing fake blood on a vacant building. She did something pretty hardcore.
Well, assuming, sure, because she doesn't blink an eye over what she's going to do.
She's going to kill the pirate.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a big deal. Of course, you know, it could also be another one of those. She knows she's going to die in there anyway. Of course, that's not the same thing dying, I guess, in there as it is in a maximum security, but it's one of those nothing left to lose kind of things, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe,
I
mean, but you still have your own internal conscience about killing somebody, and she has no qualms to just, that's the solution.
Right.
Immediately, that's her solution. We see V questioning Tasty's loyalty. She tells, you know, well, they basically can't trust Poussey. And this, she gets really angry about that. Why do you defend her over your family?
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, she wants to know where her loyalties lie, and she gets crazy with it. V does. She slams her hand down. She scares them all. She shows her aggressive side, which she doesn't do, hasn't done very often up to this point. And it kind of leaves a mark on them, I think.
Yeah. So meanwhile, the strike is falling apart. Ingalls has fainted. Yoga Jones gave it up. Brooke didn't call anybody or contact anybody. And
well, right, because the storm's coming and there's too much going on in the media right now for anybody to care. And this is where everybody finds out, too, that she is no longer a nun, that she was actually excommunicated, and I don't think they knew that.
Yeah. But that's just a symbol, I think, at this point. Who cares? She acts like a nun. If you're a nun and for 30 years and you get excommunicated, you're still a nun to me.
Well, she said that if she does this jail time, that they had told her they might reinstate her, too. So,
yeah, but that also means nothing. She's in there with them. She's playing the role of a nun. She's a nun. She's sister.
Yes, it means something to her, though. Yeah. I think it means something to her. And maybe even to the people around her.
But if she faints, they can force feed her. So that's why she doesn't want to faint. And they're kind of taunting her, like, don't faint, don't fall asleep. And so next we see Piper come in and talk to Healy. Healy's watching something on his computer, some cartoons or animal sounds. I mean, this is more evidence of Healy just being a dope. You know, why isn't he reading? He has those books. Why doesn't he read those books? Why doesn't he study? Why isn't he figuring out ways to really get women into this safe group place? But no, he's watching cartoons on the computer. But Piper comes in because the bugle's canceled.
Right.
And Healy tells her she's getting transferred to Virginia, her and 12 other girls.
Yeah, and she wants to know why. Why her?
Yeah, you know, Michelle, it's been a long time since I watched these episodes. Do you know why she's getting transferred to Virginia? Is it really just overpopulation?
No, it's not. I mean, they insinuate that it has to do with the fact that that reporter came to her.
Okay.
Because remember, as soon as, I guess we can say this since we kind of do spoilers, but as soon as Fig is out, the transfer stops.
Okay, so that's the reason. So it's amazing how I don't remember all this stuff. It's been a long time ago since I watched this.
Well, it's a lot of stuff, too.
I mean, it's a long time ago since I watched 13 and 12 and 13. But that's what the story is now, and this makes her mad because it's going to ruin her visit with Alex.
Yeah, and Alex needs to talk to her. That was very important that Alex speak to her in person, and we find out why when Alex speaks to her, but it was important that she actually get the opportunity to talk to her and not talk on the phone or whatever.
But Healy drops an ominous line on her. He says, honey, you're going down south. No closure with Alex is the least of your problems. What do you think that means?
I don't know. that was kind of threatening, didn't you think?
Of course it was.
I mean, why?
Didn't I think? Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Well, why would
That's what I'm asking you. I don't know why it was threatening, but it was 100% threatening. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a white rich girl from New York going into the South. I don't know. You're in the South. That's why you should have this answer.
Well, I don't have the answer. I'm not in Virginia. Virginia doesn't even strike me as very South. I mean, it's not what I think of. I know it is, but, you know, I picture where I am in South of here being South. I don't know.
Well, he says you're in the South, not in Virginia. South is the word.
Yep.
We hear jackhammers in the bathroom, and the girls have to share now because the other bathroom's under construction. So Boo and V cross paths, and V doesn't like her, doesn't want her because she doesn't want snitches.
Yeah, that was cold.
All right. So Tezlitz is stalking somebody who looks like V. Dun, dun, dun. But it's not really V.
I know, but she didn't know. I thought it was V, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't even know who it really was, but she shivs her with something. What was that? That was the thing that we saw before. Some piece of plastic with a sharp end on it.
Yeah, it looked like maybe a handmade something with a toothbrush handle with a razor blade soldered maybe into it or something, or even just filed down into
it. Yeah, it's not a razor blade stuck to a toothbrush. It's like a pointy... Razor blade would be cutting. This is stabbing.
Right.
It's like a pointy, like a... Looks too big to be a pen, but it kind of looks like a pen with a point filed onto it.
Yeah.
Onto it. So we don't know who that is, and we don't know if she's really dead or anything, but she looks like it's going to be bad.
Yeah, and she doesn't know why she's being stabbed either, but V is watching. V watches this from around the corner, and she definitely knows what's going on.
And Jane is talking to God in the hospital. And they're force feeding her, I guess, now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode ends with Where Have All the Flowers Gone, the song. And that song was written by Pete Seeger and probably sung by Pete Seeger. It was also made kind of popular by Peter, Paul, and Mary. But this version in the show is by Joan Baez.
Yeah, that's the one I remember, too. The Joan Baez version.
And that's the end of it. So we got two left in season two.
Just two.
All right, so that's it. Do you have any last thoughts, Michelle, about episode 11?
No, not specifically. I think the last couple of episodes, maybe three, have not been as exciting, maybe, but I think that we're definitely going into some really good episodes in the next couple ones, so...
I think we're starting to see closure. Well, there was a lot of closure in this with what's gonna happen, even if we didn't see the very act of it happening, like Cooper being on the run and after Alex, and Polly and Larry getting together, and Polly and Pete being over, and then this trying to settle things with V and all this gang interactivity with the Golden Girls and V and the Black Girls and stuff.
Yeah, we definitely had a lot of, I don't know, kind of laying the tracks maybe for some of the excitement and stuff that's coming up.
So westcoastproject.com, at Scathing Tweets, at Michelle from TN, or Facebook/Westcoast Project, and that's how you reach us.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, unless you have anything else, that's all I got.
That's it.
All right, I'll see you next week.
Okay, see you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them, everyone. When